Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
Conflict. It's such an emotionally laden and overly used word, and it's why I try really, really hard not to have it in my vocabulary, because just saying the word creates such a visceral response that many people avoid getting anywhere near anything that is remotely in its vicinity. Simple differences of opinion become something to fear addressing. Agreeing to do things you don't want to do seems much better than sharing your true feelings because it actually might disappoint the other person, and that would be conflict. The problem with viewing every possible difference as conflict means that is exactly what it will become. We create what we believe, and then when this confirms our expectation, the fear of it grows greater, and the process repeats itself into a continuous downward spiral. So, knowing that no two people will ever agree on everything, what can we do? Is there a way to diffuse the power we have given to the word and the action conflict? Hopefully, by the end of today's show, these questions will be answered. Dr. Holly Parker, she's a lecturer at Harvard University and a practicing psychologist and the associate director of training at the Edith North Rogers Memorial Veterans Hospital, is here to help hash all this out. So, Dr. Parker, thank you so much because, you know, conflict seems to be everywhere these days.
First of all, thank you so much for having me on your show. It's such an honor and a pleasure to be here, and I hope that you and your listeners are doing well. You're so right. Conflict is everywhere. It's actually really woven in to the fabric of our lives.
Oh, great.
It really
wonderful.
Is. Right? Great. That's the great news. and the thing is, conflict, I completely agree with you. It is an incredibly loaded term. If anyone says, hey, I love conflict, you think,
yeah, everybody else is running, right?
Right. What does that mean? I mean, even as you and I just now had this moment of saying, oh, conflict is everywhere. Great. Wonderful. Nobody really rejoices in conflict, and yet it actually has the potential for enormous value. And I think conflict has actually gotten a bad reputation. Differences. So if you use different terms, differences. Mm-hmm. Unique perspectives that may not go together. Right. Differences in habits. Points of view. There's actually much more to be gained in addressing them than we might think.
Right. And so, you wrote a recent piece that appeared on the Psychology Today website entitled Making Peace with Conflict, which I love the title. How do we go about taking some of this, what do I even want to call it, this aversion to the concept of conflict? How do we kind of dial it back, start the process of, I don't know if I want to normalize the term conflict as much as I want to
sure.
normalize the fact that it's inevitable, that there's, we're going to disagree, and that's not a problem.
Right, it's really not, and I think a big part of starting the process of rethinking our relationship as human beings with conflict and in our relationship is to really look at why we have an aversion to it. And I think that a lot of why we have an aversion to it is because of what we think conflict is or what we think it's going to do. And I think it especially becomes loaded when we think about what it will do. So, for example, we could think that having conflict means that we're not right for our partner, right? That, hey, we see it in the movies, right? We see it on TV shows. Aren't relationships that when people are right for each other, don't they just flow perfectly smoothly? And people just see eye to eye? Isn't that how soulmates work?
Right.
Right?
That's a conversation for a whole nother day.
Oh, my God, right? It absolutely is. And we have very understandably, we have a lot of ideas about what relationships are. We don't always unpackage them, but they're there, and they affect how we see, how we see things like conflict. And so if having differences means that, oh, gosh, maybe that means that, that we aren't as in sync, maybe that means that we're not right for each other. Well, now the stakes of conflict have just raised to a whole new level. We could think that it means that, well, if we address this difference, maybe we're being a problem, maybe our partner's being a problem, maybe we'll lose our partner, we'll undermine the connection, and somehow that, if maybe conflict will damage our relationship. But the truth is really that it's not, I think a first step is to realize that it's not actually conflict or differences in and of themselves that's the problem. It's really how we handle it. And we have a choice. We can respond by doing things like yelling, lobbing an insult, right? Mm-hmm. Rolling our eyes, having really disconnected body language, or shutting down and refusing to talk. Or we can address it in an authentic, open, kind, and constructive way. And when we do that, conflict really offers an opportunity to build trust, understanding, and connection.
Which is a wonderful thing. Gives us the opportunity to grow, because if our ideas or our way of thinking or our perspective or whatever we want to call that is just completely validated by all the other people around us, we don't grow at all. We grow a little bit by being challenged. This is true when we're learning something new in school or on the job. It's how we're not static.
No, we're really not. Absolutely. When someone else sees things in a different way, it can really broaden our horizons, help us to question our own views. And I love that you talked about growth, because there's another way that we can grow. When we can navigate the same space with someone else, knowing that they are a different human being than we are, and that's a good thing, and they have different habits that may not align with our own, and that's perfectly fine. That's a good thing, too. Then it actually helps us to grow by learning, okay, how do I share space in a healthy way with someone else? How do I make room for not only what my needs are, but for someone else's needs, too? And that's a way in which we can really develop and mature and become better as human beings, too.
Yeah, there's a little bit of I'm 100% with you on the concept. The problem, and you and I both know this, is that we're kind of left on our own to stumble and bumble our way through this.
Yes.
And this is one of the things that is part of the reason why I do the show, is to try to help people understand, no, there's actually information out there. There's actually ways to learn how to do this.
That's right.
And the problem is they're not formalized.
No. And it really is something that we do go into relationships being very explicitly untrained, right? We do not really learn how to be in a relationship with someone else. We learn it through these very unspoken ways. There's a lot of science on how we take lessons from models in our lives that we've seen. Now, that doesn't mean that experience is necessarily destiny, right? So, for example, your listeners may have had people growing up who handled conflict really well, and they were models. And then there might have even been people who handled conflict in a not so great way, and they could also use those individuals as anti-models, right? To
right.
say, oh gosh, what that person's doing, I do not want to do that. And then,
yeah.
you know, that happens too. And then there are times when you know, we can take away these lessons about how to be in a relationship, and what's tricky is we don't always even know that we've done that. You know, sometimes
yeah.
we don't even think about, okay, so what am I reenacting that I've seen before, or what am I afraid of that I've seen before and I'm trying to prevent now? So there are so many ways in which we, without even knowing it, take away lessons from us with the past and bring them with us into our current relationship.
And I think one of the challenges to that, and it addresses one of the points you make in the article, is we have a tendency that when things go sideways with somebody, mm-hmm. it's their fault. It's about if they would just do it differently,
right.
then
right.
my life would be easier. And doing
right.
this self-analysis is, you know, first off, most of us don't want to do that because, oh, my God.
Absolutely.
It's so much easier to have the other person.
Yes.
But you talk about a couple of ways, you know, to approach disagreement in a healthier manner. And one of them, and I think it goes to what we're talking about right now, is that you say that we should borrow our partner's eyes. And I think this kind of goes to this thing we're talking about and kind of eliminating the blame and maybe taking a step back and being mm-hmm. able to take as objective of a look at our own behavior as we possibly can. What does it mean to borrow our partner's eyes?
It really means trying to see the situation from your partner's point of view. How does it look to them? What are they feeling? Why are they thinking about the situation as they are? Why might they have reacted in a particular way? And we can do this in a couple of ways. One, we can directly try to put ourselves into our partner's shoes and really
imagine.
But they're
wrong.
Yeah, right? And that's where I love that you responded that way, because this doesn't mean it's easy, right? It's really, really hard. I mean, one of the most natural things, as you're saying, that we can do is, you know, when two people, when, you know, if we're having a disagreement with our partner, right, one of the most natural things as human beings that we could do is to, inside, it may look like we're listening, right, with the head nod,
uh-huh.
direct eye contact, yes, 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 right? And that's on the positive end, right? There could also
right.
be folded arms looking away, right? But let's say it just seems like we're listening. Inside, what's often going on is, okay, here's my rebuttal.
Mm-hmm.
Here's where you're wrong. Here's where I'm right. And we can actually reinforce our own ideas of what we're thinking. And so it's really, really hard to step out of that. But in some ways, so it kind of involves working harder in some ways and actually working less hard in another. Because when you step back and you borrow your partner's eyes, you don't have to devise a snappy comeback.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to devise a credible counter-argument.
Uh-huh.
All you have to do is listen. And
that's a lot
that's
harder.
It is. So it's very hard. It's very hard. And in some ways, in some ways, what I like to do is really, you know, when I work with couples on this, is you know, they'll note that I was trying to come up with how I was right,
yes.
and I was trying to think of what I could say to my partner, and you know, and actually by letting that go, in one way it is harder, right, because
mm-hmm.
we're so convinced we're correct, and in another way, it takes a lot of emotional energy. I think more emotional energy than people realize to think about how you can get your partner to change their mind, to think about how you're right and how you can phrase something in a way to get your partner to see it.
Yes.
Because what winds up happening is not only is there a lot of mental energy, but there's a lot of emotional energy, because as you're thinking about how right you are and how wrong your partner is, that's also heightening, for a lot of people, heightening their distress. And actually, when couples do that, they're actually less likely to be as attuned with each other physically, so they'll be physically out of joint with each other, and they're actually more likely to respond in more destructive ways that heighten the conflict even more. And so it's absolutely, it's really hard to do. Instead, by just stopping and slowing down and saying, okay, let me try to see where my partner's coming from. Let me focus on what it is that they're saying and what they might be feeling. If that's too hard, then another step could be, all right, let me imagine this from the perspective of somebody who's a third party, who's just neutral in this and wants the best for everyone. And actually, when couples do that, they're less likely to have escalation in their conflict, and their relationships are better over time because of it.
Well, and I do want to, I want to change something that I said a little bit before, because I don't think it's hard. I think that I want to change that. I think it's uncomfortable. It's unfamiliar.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we can, because I'm always about words. I mean, words have, they're not just the word itself. They're all, they come with, baubles of meaning hung on them.
Absolutely.
And so I think when we set something up as hard or work, there's a natural aversion to that, as opposed to, this is just unfamiliar. And I always talk to people about when you first got into a car to drive it, it was a little overwhelming with everything that you had to learn how to do. And now after, a while, you get in your car and you do these things automatically. So part of this is I want people to understand that when you start doing these new practices, they're going to feel really challenging.
Absolutely.
And you have to use a lot of energy.
Absolutely.
But as we practice them and as we see the positive results, mm-hmm. because that's one of those things that we want our partners, one of the things that I think drives human beings is we want to be understood, we want to be accepted.
Yes.
So does our partner.
Absolutely.
And this is a way to, we want our partner to hear us. So the flip side is, are we willing to give them the opportunity to be heard? And what I tell people is, listening isn't agreeing.
That's right. That's
but
right.
But it does provide potentially that other perspective.
Yes, that is such a key point that you made, right? Listening isn't agreeing, and also validating isn't agreeing. Saying, I see where you're coming from, I can see why you feel that way, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't mean that we have to agree with that person.
Mm-hmm.
And that when someone listens, I mean, we all want to be heard. I haven't talked to a single person, I'm sure you haven't either, who said, oh, no, I really actually love it when people don't listen to me. I love not being heard. It's fantastic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody likes that. And so when we listen, we're giving our partner what they want, right, which is what we want, but we're also more likely to get the very thing that we want, because when we help our partner to feel heard, they're going to be more likely to extend the same kindness to us.
Which is true. So this is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on webtalkradio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and I'm here today with psychologist and Harvard University lecturer, Dr. Holly Parker. We are talking about the inevitable disagreements that occur in relationships and how to manage them productively. So if this is a problem in your relationship, first off, you need to know you're not alone, but if you're ready to stop the avoiding or the arguing that come along with conflict, I invite you to take action right now. Send me an email or give me a call and find out how you can conquer conflict once and for all in your life. You can reach me at area code 919-924-0463. Again, that's 919-924-0463. Or you can send me an email at Leslie, L-E-S-L-I, at foundationscoachingnc.com. That's FOUNDATIONS, coaching, N as in Nancy, C as in Charlie.com. Get my emails mixed up. And I want to go back right now to this important point that you're making about how people can, you know, give the other person what they want. Because you actually talk about this in the article. You talk about dish out what you want and then save goodwill for a rainy day. And I love those two concepts. So we were talking a little bit, I think, about the dish out what you want. But if you could go a little bit more into that and then also talk about the saving goodwill.
Sure, absolutely. So when you dish out what you want, another way of thinking about it is really the golden rule applied to romantic relationships. It, you know, it really involves stopping and asking yourself, how would I feel if I reacted to, if how would I feel if my partner reacted to me in the same way that I'm about to react to my partner? And it's kind of like it's kind of similar to seeing through, you know, your partner's point of view. It's about slowing down, stopping and slowing down, giving ourselves time. You know, the enemy of escalating conflict is just buying yourself some time. And so thinking about, you know, like just kind of giving yourself that space and saying, okay, wait a second, I'm really upset right now. What am I about to do? And if I do that, what is going to be the effect? And so if we think, okay, how would I feel? What would be the effect? Because, I mean, that can be a really hard thing to notice. I mean, we've got a front row seat to what our partner does, right? I mean, we know what our partner's effect on us is because we're witnesses to it. But if we flip that and really look at ourselves from an observing point of view, how would I feel if my partner did that? Then it can help us understand our role in a very different way. And if we think about, okay, what do I want? What would I want in this moment? How would I want my partner to look at me? How would I want my partner to talk to me? What would the tone of voice be that I would want? Would I want my partner to listen? And whatever it is that we would really want, then that would be a wonderful place to start in building that connection.
Well, and the important part about this, and what I think is really one of the fascinating and more positive aspects of this is if one person does this, it changes the whole conversation. And I will tell tales on myself because my husband and I rarely ever argue, and because we kind of practice these kinds of things. And but the last argument we had, I mean, it was, you know, he actually told me to stop yelling, and I told him that I wasn't yelling because if I had been, I figured one of my children would have come out of their bedroom and said something to us. Of course, my son did the next morning go, why were you and Dad yelling at each other last night? But anyway, but he looks at me and he says, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not going to fight with you. And he stopped. And I kept trying to go. And it was like I couldn't because he wouldn't he wouldn't fight back.
Right.
And so I tell people, it's like then all the hot air went out of my balloon.
Yes.
So one person can do this. You don't need your partner.
You really don't. It's like what's the sound of one hand clapping, right? I mean, you know, you definitely, if one it takes two people to fight. It really does. And for one person, I love that example. I so appreciate that you shared that, you know, that to say, I'm not going to fight with you anymore. I don't want to do this. You know, that you know, having, it could be anything, right? Of, you know, right now I'm feeling like I'm getting too upset and I really want to talk to you about this in a more constructive way because I love you. You know, like whatever it is, any kind of phrase that can really help, or wow, I'm feeling really overwhelmed right now and I really want to handle this right. You know, just any kind of phrase, and even to be able to have some of those tucked away before tensions run high, because my goodness, it's a lot harder.
it's a lot harder
in the moment. Yes.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. I mean, I tell my clients, I said, you know what? I'm in a relationship. When I'm sitting here in the room with you, I can be completely objective and whatever. I said, when I'm at home with my husband or my kids, I said, I'm just like you guys.
Right. That's right. That's right. And you know what? The thing that's so powerful too, I love that you made that contrast about, being in the room, right, versus being at home. Because one of the things that I think, as human beings that we can lose sight of is that when we are really upset, right, with our partner, one of the underlying aspects of that is that we are really upset, actually, in part because we love this person in front of us so much, they uniquely have the power to upset us, right? That
yes.
we are invested. I remember one time I was one of my first clinical supervisors. He asked me a wonderful question. He said, Holly, do you know what the opposite of love is? And naively, I answered him, hate? And he said, no.
No.
The opposite of love is indifference.
Difference. Yeah.
And, if our partner was really, somebody who, we were not really personally, emotionally invested in, we would not get as riled up as we do. And so I think that's another important part of that is that, I've heard people say, oh, I can't believe my partner made me feel that way. Right. And one, we can't, other people
right.
aren't at fault for our feelings,
way,
right?
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, other people aren't at fault for our feelings, but also I would say, it's not your partner making you feel that way. It's this relationship is so powerful in your life. It's so important to you that when these kinds of moments arise, right, if your feelings are hurt, right, your partner is not someone who just said something snarky to you in a coffee shop who's some random person you don't know, right? That this is someone who is really significant. And the more that we care about someone, the more feelings are likely to rise. And so the challenge is, how do we handle those feelings in a way that protect our relationship? How do we respond to our partner in a way that protects that and continues to build that bond?
So is this where the save goodwill for a rainy day comes in?
Yes. Yes, it does. Because with saving goodwill for a rainy day, what that means is attending to the environment and the health of the relationship when there is no conflict and those conflict-free moments. So,
uh-huh.
for example, if your partner opens up to you and talks about their day or talks about changes in life they want to make, or maybe they let you in on an aspect of their past that you never knew about, or they talk about their hopes and their dreams, by really being an encouraging, helpful, supportive presence by listening, by treating your partner with love and understanding and care in the rest of your relationship, then what it does is it really banks goodwill. It increases this level of trust, this level of connection. And so then when there are differences that arise and there are moments of tension, then couples can really draw on that. I tend to think of relationships as like little mini bank accounts,
big
right?
Account.
That we can really, the more that we have that goodwill and that positivity that's stored up, the more that we're likely to use it. And in fact, when couples do have more of that goodwill, they are far less likely to react to each other in ways that are less healthy, in ways that are more destructive, that can mm-hmm. create more disconnection.
Yeah, so I talk about
protecting.
I talk about giving your partner the benefit of the doubt,
mm-hmm.
what do you know about your partner as a person?
Yes.
And if you think that they're a good person, and this is kind of where the halo effect kind of comes in, if I believe my partner is a good person and they're doing something that doesn't fit, then somehow something's off and that's a place to talk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I also talk about the same idea about with the bank accounts is that I tell my clients, I said, if you're hitting the mark 80 to 85% of the time, your relationship can handle the 15% where you kind of get off track.
Mm-hmm.
But the less from that point you are. So even if it's half the time you're hitting the mark, your relationship is actually on a negative trajectory because of that 5-to-1
positive to negative
ratio that has been discovered in research about happiness and things like that. You know,
absolutely.
That negatives are so powerful.
They're so powerful.
Which is why I don't like the word conflict, because that's real negative.
Well, and you know, and it really, you know, conflict certainly has had a negative connotation to it. And, you know, and I think there are different ways that people could approach that. You know, they might decide to use the word conflict and define it differently, or they may decide not to use it at all and say, you know what, I just have this permanent negative connection to the word. I'm going to choose something else, right? And it could be differences, right? Or you know, when issues arise, right? It could be anything, but that to I think the important piece is what you're really speaking to. Is how we think about managing whatever it is that we choose to label it as, right? Whether it's conflicts,
absolutely.
Differences, issues, that those things are not in and of themselves problematic, but it's really how we respond to each other in the moment, and that's where the real difference is what we do with it,
and that's something that actually can be taught and practiced. And I think that it's in alignment with a lot of the whole mindfulness, acting with intention, focus that's going on in the world today. And it really is about taking a breath. And making a decision, and I love the dishing out what you want. How do I want to be perceived? What am I trying to accomplish?
Right.
And is what I'm about to do going to get me there, or is it going to move me in the opposite direction?
That's right. Exactly. I mean, it's and that having that kind of intention can really help to put us more in the driver's seat when it comes to conversation, shared driver's seat, right? Because we're not the only driver, but more in the driver's seat, right? Because we, you know, we might, for example, as humans, you know, we could, you know, say something that's unkind to our partner. We might, you know, have, you know, we might cross our arms and have an hostile look on our face, right? We might yell, we might shut down, and then be mystified at why our partner is getting more upset, and why our partner is saying something that's unkind, and, you know, why our partner is shutting down. And instead, by thinking, okay, as you said, right, what is it that I want? Where do I want this to go? What is my goal? And if the goal is to be heard, if the goal is to create more understanding, then okay, what is it that I would need? What is it that I can do to help move this moment with my partner in that direction?
Yeah, I don't know if you're familiar with Terry Real, but he's actually up in the Boston area, and he wrote a book several years ago called The New Rules of Marriage, and in that he has this line that I need to have, you know, stenciled and stuck on my office wall, and it's, how can I help you give me what I need? And I love it because that puts me in charge of it. And
that's right.
In hard discussions, in things that are kind of escalating in a way I don't want, I can stop it.
That's right.
Which is really terrific, and I think really gives people a sense of power. And this is a subject that I think we can be talking about for a long time. Unfortunately, we're out of time. So can you let people know where they can learn more about how to deal with conflict, how to get more information about you?
Yes, absolutely. They can find me on my Psychology Today webpage. That's Your Future Self. People can also find me at my website. That's drhollyparker@gmail.com. And I would say also, actually, on the if you're looking for other resources, readings about conflict, Psychology Today also has a wonderful array of different articles on conflict. So I would definitely recommend looking at that. And I also have a book out on helping partners to bridge the divide of emotional unavailability that also touches on conflict. And the title of that book is If We're Together, Why Do I Feel So Alone?
Oh, what a that just struck me. That's a great title, but gosh, it that is true. There's nothing worse than feeling alone when you're actually in a relationship.
Absolutely.
So to paraphrase General George Patton, he said, if two people agree on everything, one of them isn't necessary. So disagreement is a given, but escalating it to conflict or to fighting is a choice. And this escalation, or its opposite, avoidance of dealing with difficulties or issues at all costs, is ultimately destructive to your relationship. And learning a better way to manage your differences is the path to a thriving, truly connected relationship. So I hope you'll keep listening to the show for more information. And until next week, stay loving.